This podcast is brought to you by Recontract, the leading software to automate your reconditioning process and streamline your entire used vehicle management process. Visit recontract.com to learn more. That's recontract.com.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to this weekend drive edition of Daily Drive for the second week in April 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today, we're breaking down some of the biggest stories in the auto industry from the past week and looking forward to what's in store in the days ahead. Today on the show, we'll talk about what to expect this coming week in the UAW vote at VW's plant in Chattanooga.
The workers told me, we're not going to waste our time and our money putting up signs, taking out billboards, radio ads. That's all for the public. Mm-hmm. What we want to do is really convince the workers.
Our own Michael Martinez joins us in a few minutes. But first, Jamie, welcome to the weekend. How are you doing?
All right, Kel. How about you?
Doing good, man. We got some news. Let's get it rolling. So, Jamie, U.S. safety investigators say a Ford Mustang Mach-E was using an advanced driver assistance system during a fatal crash earlier this year. Clearly, this just isn't a Tesla thing. This is a development issue. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, the systems that are out there need to be better if they're going to be out there. And a really interesting piece just moved on the website. Our Pete Bigelow was writing about this group. They're the Association for Computing Machinery. That's the world's largest organization of computing professionals. They hand out the Turing Award, and they are really doubtful that self-driving cars are really going to work, that they can make roads safer or even be just as safe as humans. The quote from them was, the feasibility of reaching that goal is uncertain, which I believe is nerd speak for, I don't think that's going to work. So maybe it will, maybe they're being overly cautious, but these are, you know, tech-minded people, and they're just not sure that it isn't too complicated, too fast moving, and with too much at stake to leave it in the hands of computers.
Yeah. So you think about all the money that's been spent for development for self-driving. It's just all of that kind of just burns up and is now out of the window.
Well, we've certainly seen a lot of progress in the regular driver assist systems. You know, cars today do really well at staying in the lane if it's well marked. They have adaptive cruise that's usually quite effective, but they also have minders to nag the driver and make sure you're paying attention because it might not stop soon enough when you're coming up fast on a car on the highway. So you got to pay attention, and apparently that's just what it takes to drive a car.
Okay, quick story. So you know how Tesla has having their free 30-day trial of their full self-driving, okay?
Yeah, how do you like it?
All right, I've tried it, and it still makes me a bit uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And here's the reason why. When it makes right turns, it hugs way too close to the corner. So I feel like I'm going to hit the curb. And then there's even times where I'm getting off of an on-ramp, getting off the freeway. And let's say the speed limit here in Vegas is 65. Well, I'm coming off this on-ramp, and I'm still doing 65. And it's not till I'm a little more than halfway off the off-ramp, I begin to slow down. So it still makes me a little uncomfortable.
Pretty aggressive, yeah.
Yeah, it's extremely aggressive, and I think that is the part that scares me the most.
Well, be safe out there.
Yeah, I'm not using it again. It was like two or three times. It was fun, but I'm good. Also, Jamie, we reported on this week. Ford is slashing prices of its electric F-150 Lightning. Ford is resuming deliveries after a halt earlier this year due to a quality issue. And Ford also had reduced production in January. Now, Jamie, has the Lightning been underperforming for Ford? And now they kind of have to do what they got to do to move the metal?
A little bit. You know, you can tell The last one you pointed out, I think, is the really important one, which is they're cutting production. You know, they're making fewer of them. They had to reassign some people or let them go because they know that if they make them all, they're going to really be underwater. And even as it is, it's been challenging. I think, you know, Ford is not alone in terms of overestimating the market for $100,000 EVs. And there's a lot of them out there. And all those companies are questioning their strategy and really trying to move down market and offer things that are more affordable. Ford's been very aggressive on that. So they're trying to shift gears. But yeah, the Lightning, I mean, it's a cool truck. There's a lot to like about it. I think the people who get that work truck version of it, that's much more affordable, you know, I think they're happy with it. But it really was so hyped when it came out. You saw it on all the like morning shows and, you know, TV news that isn't news, you know, talking about it like, okay, this whole EV thing's been solved. We can do a full-size truck that costs the same and does all the same stuff. And it's like, well, there's a version that costs the same because it's subsidized by these super expensive ones. And there's the limited market for super expensive electric pickup trucks.
Do you think that Ford might have rushed the Lightning?
I mean, I think objectively they rushed it in terms of not doing a full developed, you know, electric truck. They took the old F-150 and they made it electric by putting batteries in it, which, you know, there was a bit of a craze. A lot of people were really interested in EVs. They wanted to see that an electric truck could be done. And so, you know, maybe it was still the right thing to test the market and see what could happen. But we know now they're delaying development of an electric pickup, and as well as the three-row crossover, as they try to shift gears down market in a hurry.
Well, this is something that has blown my mind. You did a piece on the radio there in Detroit about this, and I need you to just help me out with this, okay, Jamie? I'm an ignorant man. Help me, all right? So here we go. What do you think about Mercedes-Benz USA's change on how they report sales? Now they'll report wholesales, which is factory output to dealers, instead of retail sales. Now, am I crazy? But one would think retail sales are the sales that matter. Make this make sense, please.
I can't make it make sense except to say that I don't like it. This is one of the things I don't look. I've been doing this a long time, 25 plus years as an auto journalist, and I don't like changes to sales reporting and the data that the companies traditionally disclosed that made it a really well understood industry. It was a pretty transparent industry. They tell you the sales, they tell you the inventory. You could get pretty reliable estimates of what the incentives were and have a real good sense of, you know, how the companies were operating and what the consumer attitude was, what the consumer's ability to buy was. And now, you know, we get GM and Stellantis reporting quarterly. It all started with Tesla, which does quarterly results, and they're global, so they don't even break out what's the US. Jaguar Land Rover now does, you know, North America results. They don't tell us what the US figures are. But this might be the worst of all, because the wholesales, I mean, that's up to the company, right? They can make whatever they want. And they explain that they do it to better align with the earnings, and that's accurate. But, you know, they could just announce their production and that would effectively signal what the revenue is likely to be for the quarter. But what we need to know, especially when we see things in the market where companies make too much of something, right?
Right.
You want to know what's really selling. And that's what things, you know, the calculations like the seasonally adjusted annual rate of sales, you know, that we really look at to get how fast are we going? How strong is this market? That's based on the sales to consumers. Those are, whether they're individuals or they're companies or they're government agencies, who is buying them? How many are they buying and in what patterns? That's what determines, you know, everything we know about the market. So it's very frustrating. I don't like it.
Yeah. So like if I'm a Mercedes-Benz shareholder, I should be nervous right now, correct?
it possibly... I didn't check the stock. I should have checked the stock. I would think they should be unhappy, but we certainly didn't see GM take any punishment from the market when they went to their quarterly sales reports. I think in their case, they were seeing a lot of negative numbers. You know, you think back in the history books, you know, GM used to have like 50% market share. And so it just goes down, down, down for decades. And they're like, we're tired of these sales reports. We don't like it anymore. We don't want to play this game.
Right.
And I think, you know, everyone's kind of gotten that. Of course, when you're on the upswing, if you're adding new models and you're growing, it's great to get the positive numbers every month. But it should be really about just having the data to understand what's happening so we know the industry better and so your investors know better what's going on. And they should punish companies when they are less transparent.
I agree with that. All right. Well, coming up, we'll hear from Automotive News staff reporter Michael Martinez about the UAW's upcoming vote in Chattanooga. That's next on Weekend Drive.
UAW President Sean Fain says the union has the best opportunity for growth in his lifetime.
I look at my grandparents' generation, you know, coming out of the Great Depression in the 30s and 40s when labor exploded at that time. I think it's a similar situation.
In his exclusive interview with our own Michael Martinez, Fain talks about the upcoming vote to unionize Volkswagen's plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and what this moment means for the future of the American labor movement.
Come back on Monday and Tuesday to hear our two-part interview on Daily Drive with UAW President Sean Fain, wherever you get your podcasts.
Managing your used inventory is not exclusive to one person or one part of the dealership. What does the communication look like between sales and service? Are your vehicles getting passed from trade-in to recon with no hiccups? What is your average cycle time to get a used car frontline ready? There is a lot to keep track of all at once. Right now, you could be experiencing three major issues with your recon information causing process breakdowns. One, lack of visibility into recon pricing to inform the appraisal process. Two, no access to that appraisal information when working through recon approvals. Three, missed information and process bottlenecks trying to manage a vehicle across multiple systems and tools. Full insight throughout your entire process is crucial to making your used car department the most efficient and profitable it can be. Recontract combined with AutoVision creates an end-to-end tool for your used car department to address these breakdowns. With access to live appraisal information and reconditioning approvals, you get a single view of every vehicle with all the data you need right in one place. Make more educated decisions on your used car inventory faster with all your data easily accessible at any stage. Visit info.recontract.com/autovision for more information. That's info.recontract.com/autovision.
Welcome back to Weekend Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. Workers at Volkswagen's plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, vote this upcoming week on whether to form a UAW local. Michael Martinez covers the UAW and Ford for us at Automotive News. He recently visited Chattanooga to talk with workers and get the temperature on the ground. We spoke here at Automotive News headquarters in Detroit about what he saw and what to expect as workers cast their votes in the coming days. Michael Martinez, welcome back to Weekend Drive.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Of course, the original Weekend Drive was a video show with you and our former colleague Michael Wayland. And so it's all come full circle.
Yeah, a little bit different setup now, but nice to be back.
Yeah. So in the wake of the UAW's, you know, historic contracts they won last year with the Detroit 3, Sean Fain and the UAW really set their sights on organizing the non-union plants of America. There are a lot of them, transplants, you know, overseas companies, but also the new startups. First stop, Chattanooga. You were just down there last week or this recently. What did you see? What was it like?
Well, it was really interesting. It was about a little over a week before they're scheduled to vote there. And what caught my attention is as you're driving into the Chattanooga plant. It's massive, massive site, right? Mm-hmm. The main road leading into the main entrance is called Volkswagen Drive. And there were dozens and dozens of anti-union yard signs stuck along the side of the road there and in the roundabouts and everything of that nature. Really interesting messages. My favorite was, "Don't Detroit my Chattanooga." There were some tying the UAW to Joe Biden. There were signs that just said, "Can I just work in peace? The UAW can't take a hint." So very strong anti-union presence, not a single pro-union sign. Hmm. And I found that interesting. It's actually on purpose. This is sort of part of the UAW's revamped strategy. The workers told me, "We're not going to waste our time and our money putting up signs, taking out billboards, radio ads. That's all for the public." Mm-hmm. What we want to do is really convince the workers, really get the voters, the 50 plus one that we need in order to win this election. So they've spent all their time and energy within those plant gates, handing out flyers, talking with workers on breaks, really trying to have one-on-one conversations.
So that's a change because they found that what they were doing before wasn't working. Were there other things that were flawed in the UAW's past strategy?
Well, that's a loaded question. There's definitely a lot of things. If you think about organizing itself, one anecdote I thought was kind of interesting. A worker I spoke with told me back in 2019, the last vote that they lost by a pretty slim margin, they did house calls. It's sort of a common organizing strategy. You go knock on people's doors outside of the workplace environment. Maybe they'll invite you in. You have a little more time to talk to them. But apparently in 2019, those VW workers absolutely hated the idea of door knocking and somebody talking to them at their home. So this time around, they're not doing that. It's a pitfall they said they've avoided because of that past experience. Now, the UAW itself was also criticized for, not only in Volkswagen's case, but in the case of other organizing drives, having too much of a top-down approach where leadership from Detroit would come down and tell them what to do, how to run their campaigns. This time it's different. They say it's worker-led. And from what I saw in Chattanooga and what I've heard from other workers at Mercedes and Hyundai plants, they actually mean it. They're getting out of the way, letting the workers decide what strategies are best and letting them sort of handle things.
Well, they are supposed to be union locals.
And another interesting fact is that in Chattanooga, there is a UAW Local 42. It was established in 2014 in another failed attempt at VW. And it sort of exists as this kind of zombie organization, right? Because a worker can't join it today because they're not unionized. They wouldn't be able to pay dues to the UAW, but it's still there. There's like a skeleton crew in place. So they have some infrastructure because of these past few failed attempts. They have that experience. They have those lessons learned, and they're hoping that's going to lead them to victory this time, especially since they were only a few dozen votes short the time before.
Mm-hmm. So if they win this time, what's next? Where's Sean Fain likely to go next? You mentioned Mercedes.
Yeah, Mercedes plant in Alabama outside Tuscaloosa. They are next with a vote. We expect that probably by early May, so within the next month or so or a few weeks here. But in terms of what's next, it's not even necessarily a vote. It's the second that they win, if they do, they're going to start to push for a contract because that's a very important next step of this process. You don't just need to win, you need to win and get a contract. In the past, that's proven elusive at other companies that have unionized. The organizations they work for try to play games and delay things. So Sean Fain really wants to, day one, start focusing on that first contract.
And you got to speak with Sean Fain. He's pretty confident, isn't he?
Very confident. He not only expects to win at Volkswagen, but Mercedes and Hyundai and Nissan and all across the country. Tesla, Rivian, you can go on down the list. And there's a few good reasons for his optimism. I don't think it's entirely unfounded here. You have that revamped organizing strategy that I just talked about. You have better conditions that the UAW is operating in. In the past, during the Great Recession, they were slashing their pay. They were giving up benefits in order to keep the Detroit 3 alive. And if you're a worker in the South and you're seeing, wait a minute, I'm going to join this union that's going to negotiate lower pay and worse benefits, why would I do that? Mm-hmm. It's a bad sales pitch. That's what one expert told me. Also, you had that corruption scandal that was a big deal in late last decade, beginning part of this decade even. And the UAW's past that now. They have new democratically elected leaders. The environment, the climate for the unions better. And also, I think the third thing we can point to is the fact that the union has a better understanding of the opposition's playbook. And in the case of VW, at least, management, which at times has been hostile and helped contribute to defeats, has promised to remain neutral. And that's another thing I did see when I was down there. VW is really keeping that commitment of neutrality this time around, more so than they did in 2019.
I think a lot of times companies say they're going to be neutral, but then they're pretty active trying to spread the counter argument, at least, if not anti-union, at least what might not be a benefit to you.
And that's exactly what happened in 2019. On the surface, they said, yeah, we support whatever our workers decide. But then they hosted Republican Governor Bill Lee to speak to workers. They had a lot of captive audience meetings, morning meetings with management and supervisors speaking to the workers, telling them things like, hey, you know, if you unionize, we wouldn't have this direct line of conversation to you. You'd have to go through an intermediary. Maybe Volkswagen wouldn't want to invest as much here anymore if they're unionized and their labor costs go up. Hint, hint, vote no, in as many words, right? This time, they're not doing that. VW told me they're not inviting the governor inside the plant. They're not hosting any town halls for workers, pro or anti. In fact, I took a tour of the plant and there were messages on monitors leading into the main way that workers go into the plant that encouraged them to vote and reminded them, even if you've signed a union support card, an authorization card, that doesn't count as a yes vote. You still need to vote yes. Or if you didn't, you still need to make your voice heard if you want and vote no. So those reminders, I thought, were a pretty good indication that, you know, the company at least is trying to present all the options.
Voting is Wednesday through Friday. Correct. Will we get results Friday night, Saturday?
We would expect probably Friday night.
Michael Martinez, thank you so much for joining me. Can't wait to read your story in the automotive news. And of course, we'll keep track of the results when they break on autonews.com.
Thanks, Jamie.
That's all for this weekend drive edition of Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News coordinating producer Jake Neer for his help on today's podcast. You can get the latest news on union organizing efforts, electrification, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back on Monday for our exclusive interview with UAW President Sean Fain.
Naturally, with the Big Three campaign, they see the UAW doing things differently now. We've really turned the union around and we're doing things, you know, we're a lot more aggressive. We're how the union should have been for years and hasn't been.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. If you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.